AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Timo Abbas-Daly, and in this episode, we'll be reviewing all the Formula 2 and Formula 3 action from Bahrain. Joining me in this crusade is none other than Mr. Jesse Billington. How are you?
I'm doing all right, actually. It's been a busy Monday on press for Classic Car Weekly, and I've just scrammed dinner, so I've got some sort of volcanic-level indigestion, but I'm ready to talk F2 and F3 to take my mind off things.
Thus is the dedication to the feeder series. And in case you missed our F2 and F3 Who's Who episodes, you listeners can go and check those out in your own time. They'll be up everywhere else where all the other podcasts are.
And when you do check them out, check out the day that, especially on the F3 one, we published it, because it came out at least 2 weeks before we broke this upcoming piece of news, which is interesting.
Yes, because I was curious for ages who the final piece in the F3 puzzle was going to be, and I did a little bit of research and I found out that it'd be Luke Browning and he would be joining Formula 3. So we went and recorded the podcast, as we do, with Fraser Ford. Hi, Fraser. Thanks for listening. And then last week, just a few days before the season kicked off, Luke Browning then got confirmed for Formula 3 for 2023, which really threw me for six, because I was like, yeah, I know. We all know that, don't we? That's not breaking news, but apparently it was, so I'm really curious as to how I managed to find that out now.
Yeah, a bit of an odd one, but hey, he's here. He's come from GB3, I think, if I'm correct.
Yeah, GB3 champion last year, so
he didn't
definitely
do too
deserves
badly.
To be there, and he did all right, all things considered, for a first weekend, supposedly with very short notice, although I kind of have to put a bit of an asterisk next to that, because I suspect someone knew something. I definitely did. Maybe I should have entered the lottery that week. Never mind. Can't do much about that. But Luke Browning, good job, and good job me for knowing that ahead of time. But that's pretty much all of what the hell has happened for this week, because we can just get straight into all of the Formula 2 action straight off the bat, which, Jesse, we were thinking that this was going to be not tame, but it was definitely the least one we were looking forward to in terms of the lineup when we were reviewing Who's Who. And then Formula 2 kind of throttled us by the throat for thinking that and treated us far too nicely.
Yeah, it sort of chokeslammed us into the bed and really gave us a bit of a surprise there, because we were sort of looking at it going, it's going to be Teo Pourchaire's year to finally get his F2 championship under his belt. And then, F2 had very different ideas to that one. Obviously, clean pole.
Not for Teo Pourchaire, to be fair.
Not for Teo Pourchaire. He achieved what he set out to achieve. Clean pole with a very, very fast lap time. Really, really impressive. And the way he just sort of generated the speed and the time around that course was fantastic. And again, indicative of someone who has got their eye in for this year and is looking to make a big championship run. Sprint race, we're expecting the usual chaos with the sort of mixed up front end of the grid. And Ralph Boschong, a driver who we sort of always had mid-tier views on, sort of ran away with it, really, which was quite impressive.
Yeah, it was someone finally awoke him. And it's just, I mean, last year was a tricky year for him, out for injury and all this kind of stuff. And he showed flashes of it when he came back, but then he had to go away because the injury was still coming and playing up a bit. But this year, he just seems to have, no, he's really on it. He hopefully can stay for the entire year. I mean, starting out of the gates like this has got to help you get some sponsors, surely, if you're still needing some. But yeah, like you say, you just run away with it while everyone else behind was just squabbling like mad. And then won the sprint race, 96th attempt, as I put on my Instagram story, 96th time is obviously the charm. And over 2,000 laps he's raced in Formula 2, which it's kind of Black Knight-ish from Monty Python or Twitter Olympics Monty Python. Like, he doesn't know when he's beaten, he doesn't know when he's won, but he keeps going and we love him for it.
Yeah, he just doesn't give in, and you've got to respect the dedication for not quitting and packing up, especially when you're getting to over 2,000 laps raced, 96 races, and you're thinking, okay, we'll give it this season and so then perhaps knock it on the head. But then you come into this season, all of a sudden Boschong's like, hey, I think I've got this. And even I think obviously where he missed out on a lot of last season, there's possibly this extra motivation to sort of come back and sort of not go out with a whimper, but go out with a bang. And it's a So not so much a bang, but a fantastic flourish, which we like to see. Then we had obviously Halgrim P2 and Victor Martens, last year's Formula 3 champion, coming home P3, which is a nice sort of nice little link there. And again, good case in point for this boy's pace and ability to get on with the car.
Yeah, it was very nice to see. I mean, we've seen with Helga last year that it's not so easy all the time. You can't always be Oscar Piastri coming in and just romping home with it straight away in your rookie season. But Helga on it again and showing maybe he's a Mick Schumacher and he takes that first season, get to grips with everything in second season, let's go for it. And Victor Martin's like, yeah, I don't want to do that. I want to just go for this right now. And third place on debut, very respectable. And he's battling hard with Iwasa and Drivler sniffing in around it too, so it wasn't an easy go for him. And some excellent overtakes the whole way through that with dive bombs and defensive moves just left, right and centre, really. And not even just at the top of the field either. You had silly fun battling towards the end of the race for 13th, 14th, 15th, which you'd think they were fighting for podium positions with the way they were scrabbling towards themselves. And when you realise it's a sprint and not only are there less points available than normal, but you're still out of the points positions, that's just mad.
It's early doors suggest, I think it's the early exuberance from some of the drivers moving up from F3, which I know we'll move on when I get to my sort of thoughts on the F2 race, the feature race rather. But yeah, there's a lot of energy going into this sort of opening round of Formula 2, and I like it. And equally, you said about sort of Helga's season last year being a bit more, that he's possibly more of a Schumacher having to sort of take that second season. That's not to poo-poo his first season in Formula 2.
Well, no, it's still a Helga very good,
very nicely good. Indeed.
He did a feature race win in Baku and did fairly decently. But again, I think it was that expectation that Piastri put on everyone from previous years that you kind of have to perform, and because he won F3 in such a dominant style that it was just expected of him. And I think that this is a very good way to show everyone at Red Bull that I'm still here. Don't count me out just yet. I'd rather be, wouldn't you rather have someone who's consistent and can build on that rather than maybe a one-hit wonder?
He's sort of proving he's not so much a flash in the pan, but a sort of long-term build-upon driver, which I think Red Bull, once they've sort of figured out what on earth their future is going to be, whenever Max Verstappen finally leaves, they need to obviously know they've got a decent driver lineup that they can start sort of cycling through and finding out who's the best spot to sort of replace him with. So yeah, it's a good move from Helga, great from Martins. And then, like you said, yeah, this brilliant battle all the way through, which lined us up neatly for a feature race. And I know you both had different thoughts about the quote of the weekend. Both of them stemmed from the feature race, but for me, mine has to be coming from the end of the feature race, which was from the team radio to Zane Maloney, the Carlin team radio, which was, imagine what you could do if you qualify where you should, which seems on the face of it quite harsh, and Carlin is known for its quite harsh team radios, but they have a point because, good gracious, Zane Maloney put in a hell of a performance in the feature race, did he not?
Oh, he very much did, our boy from Barbados, such to the extent that I very much could even spot Bushy Buck on the side of the car properly now. And it's I do enjoy that, and I do hope that we can have a race there someday of some kind, even if it's just a charity or for the Undercut podcast. There's the plug now. but yeah, Zane Maloney, just no one told him he was a rookie.
No, he looked at home in that car and looked at home racing in that series. So there was nothing to say that this boy is in his first year in Formula 2. It was fantastic. Similarly,
and I mean, I know Carlin are known for their harsh team radios at times, but that, I mean, come on, the boy's in his first race. He's not going to get it out the bat. You could at least be a little more lenient with him and just like, you know what, good job for P3. I know it's kind of like gentle ribbing, but also, that's a bit harsh on your first weekend in Formula 2, no?
It's a little harsh, but equally, if they know he's got the performance in him, why not push him and encourage him to get to that performance? If equally, they've probably found out exactly how to appropriately motivate that driver. If they've got this good connection, bear in mind the success Carlin has of getting drivers into Formula 1 and successful drivers at that. Carlin's probably got the right idea when it comes to understanding the psyche of each driver and finding out what motivates and drives them. And potentially with Zane, he needs not necessarily the sort of harder crop, but more of a sort of sharper prod, as it were, I think would be the best way of saying it. I think this is signs of good things to come, certainly.
Would you like a ballsy prediction early doors then for his future?
Oh, go on. We love a good ballsy prediction from you.
I'm going to say he replaces Lando Norris at McLaren for
2026 when
2025.
Ooh, Albon goes to Sauber a year early.
I don't know why you brought Albon into it.
Not Albon, Norris even goes to Sauber a year early.
Potentially, or he just sits out a year and goes to IndyCar. Maybe he gets switched around. But I'll leave that up to Zach. But my point is, yeah, Carlin, McLaren, why not? Let's have a bit different. It's always Red Bull and AlphaTauri. Why not just go straight McLaren?
It's not a bad shout. Not a bad shout at all. Yeah, I mean, there was action on the rest of the field as well. There wasn't action for Teo Pourchaire, who just sort of vanished and then watched the rest of the race on the screen.
He did a very good Max Verstappen impression.
He did, yes, yeah, and just sort of left all the action behind him. 19 seconds up the road from Ralph Boschong. Again, another good weekend for Ralph Boschong. Then, of course, we had Maloney in P3, and he'd come all the way from P18. So, yeah, it was good little race for Pourchaire. And again, what he needs to really start off this season strong. Obviously, pole position really affording him what he needs for the feature race. Just pretty good action.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a race of two tails, where you've got Pourchaire up front who just having a nice little Sunday drive for himself, just essentially doing qualifying laps, more or less. And then behind him is just pure chaos that just kept building and building and building. And you think they could have probably done that all day if it had been allowed. It was just absolutely nuts. It's just madness, wasn't it? They're just so much overtaking and switching back left, right, and center all over the place. And you're just like, they've really gone early doors. This is going to be a long championship, but they're desperate to fight for these other places here.
I mean, basically, as soon as you start working back from Pourchaire, everyone else in the top 10 was pretty much constantly battling for it, especially going into that final phase where you had the differential in the tyres and the tyre compounds. So all of a sudden you had Kushmini, Vachon, Leclerc, Hajar, Iwasa, Fittipaldi and Correa making up the rest of that top 10 and battling it out to the last lap. Absolutely fantastic. I was a bit disappointed in Fittipaldi. Could have held it together for a little longer. There was a few mistakes creeping in under the pressure, possibly. But we saw some good stuff from Iwasa in there.
Iwasa with a bit of a quiet weekend, but is glad that he's at least in the middle of it all and keeping himself relevant that way. Because again, if you're looking at that Mini, Leclerc, Hadjar, they're all and Correa, semi-ish, are all the newbies in Formula 2 this year. So for Iwasa to make sure that okay, a couple of them beat him, but not all of them. You need to keep some of them behind and just make sure you're at least with them, if nothing else there. And I've got to say, as impressed as we were with Ralph Boschong getting on the podium twice in a weekend, Kushmini, very much credit where it's due. We were not expecting a P4 from him, and he was up in the podium at one point. It was Maloney that got him, which if you look at last year's F3 performances, that doesn't surprise you, but you're thinking, damn, Mine is really going for it, and Campos an incredibly strong weekend for them in F2.
Yeah, Kushmini coming from not sort of a decent record in F3 and moving up into F2, and you don't expect.
I wouldn't have promoted him a little more.
No, that's the thing. I don't think we would have done. And then all of a sudden he's in F2 and is able to extract these performances. And he's not there by fluke or happenstance. He'd qualified well and raced well to maintain that position, which was good. My one sort of flaw in that top 10 is possibly Leclerc. He sticks out to me as a bit of a sore thumb, one who in that group really could have done better, but just wasn't. He wasn't quite gelling with the car he was in. And this will lead on quite nicely to your quote of the race, really, which was, I'll let you give it.
Yeah, it was, again, Boschong magic, essentially. It looks like he maybe got his Hogwarts letter better late than never. Alex Brundle, friend of the podcast, who on Boschong's lap one ascension just cast the spell Wingardium Lucky Upper.
Yeah.
And the seas just parted for him, essentially, down kind of turn 5 and 6 area on lap one. And it kind of had one wondering if Ralph Boschong was either the Messiah or a very naughty boy.
It was... yeah, just really impressive driving to get through a pretty big melee that opened up ahead of him. But Arthur Leclerc was one of the drivers.
Easy mistake to make this weekend with all the tyre lockups.
Was a driver that really did seem to be struggling with the sort of locking the fronts going into turn one and turn four. He was overdriving the car way too much. And I think he hadn't quite adapted to what that F2 chassis is like to manhandle compared to the F3.
He wasn't aware of. He was aware of where he was, but like, how did I get here? Panic.
Yeah, I think the F3 car, you can take it a lot more by the scruff of the neck and really chuck it about a bit more, whereas the F2, you have to not treat it gently, but you have to have some level of flow and sort of constancy with the car, and you can't be sort of jamming at the brakes and jamming at the throttle like you do in F3 a bit more. Because as Leclerc proved, it's an easy way to throw away positions, and you had Richard Vachon coming back on a odd strategies, but he came back through with it And I think had Leclerc not spent as much time sort of torturing his front tires, I think there was an interesting note of Leclerc to see the stewards for cruelty against front tires, because there were some brutal lockups on there. It was a surprise that he was able to not turn them into stop signs by the end of the race.
Yeah, no, it was a shame for him, but I mean, again, decent performance overall for a first race weekend. So it's just, I think it's because we expect better, or maybe we don't. And it was that questioning of should he have been elevated to F2 this year or not, and we're going to be harsh about it because someone has to be.
Yeah, I perhaps one more F3 year.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
You've just seen him right and given him a chance to experience a bit of dominance in F3, where you can then perfect your sort of smooth driving style that you need for F2. And crucially, if you are going to get into F1, you cannot be sort of jumping from pedal to pedal and literally sort of using it like it's an Irish jig. You've got to have a level of smoothness with the controls to get the most out of those chassis. Otherwise, you just overwhelm the grip all of a sudden. You end up with way more power than grip, and that's how you quickly find yourself going backwards into a tire wall.
F2 did get a rank of A from me, though, if we're going to be grading it for performances over the weekend there in terms of returning to action. It was definitely, for me, the top tier of motorsport across the three Formula this weekend.
Across the three Formula, yeah, I would give it the highest grade out of the three of them. I'd argue that potentially, if we're going to go stateside and include the two series, major series from there,
it'd we're be not going to do that answer. Because it gets tricky then.
It gets tricky then, but yeah, we'll touch on it a little bit later. But yeah,
Formula we want F3 had a anyway. Good start.
Formula 3, Gabriel Mini claimed the first pole position of 2023. Interesting little pole position. Nice to see from the young driver. And then the sprint race happened.
Yeah, which naturally automatically means that Mini gets demoted down to P12 for that. So it automatically makes his life much more difficult. It was a good little sprint race, though. I mean, ish, when it was going.
Yeah.
Because it was very stop-starty. But the bits where we were racing were good.
The second
but we just
half
didn't get
of
a lot
it.
Of it. Yeah. It got there for the last 5-7 laps or so, I think it was. And it was kind of, it was a, for a Saturday on an F1 weekend where it's the start of the season, it was a nice little appetizer. It was a shame we couldn't have had more of it, but it was like, okay, my appetite is whetted. Now we can continue with the other courses.
It's like getting either an amuse-bouche or like a really nice warm bread roll with a good salted butter at a good restaurant. It's that sort of, yes, I'm ready for something more now. That's good, but obviously it's clearly not a main course. And yeah, it did its purpose.
And Pepe Mate won the race. He's back in F3 after a previous best finish of P9 at Monza last year. So he was a very happy chappy. Also with Campos, very good year for them. Maybe, who knows? Very good weekend at the very least. Colapinto Pinto was in second, and then also another returnee from last year, Kyle Collette, in third. So again, nice to see some familiar names at the top where we kind of hope we would see them as they were coming back for a second year.
Mm-hmm. Feature race had different results. Portoleto wins the race, and this is the thing that really got my goat. Mini gets a 5-second penalty for a start procedure infringement. Fair enough. You've done a start procedure infringement. Okay, penalties, because we saw that happen in Formula One. Okay, same across the board. Happy with that. What I hate is the fact that it came in the middle of a safety car. That really, because he drove.
That's just bad timing.
His nuts off. He was right. He was at the front, and Bortoleto knew that all he needed to do was stay close, wait for that 5 seconds to get added on, win by default. It's still a win, and he'd driven to earn it at Bortoleto. This isn't anything against Bortoleto's win.
It was a good rookie
driving.
Play.
Really good rookie play. And then, obviously, we have the safety car in the final few laps. Race finishes under safety car, and you just get all the pack bunch up. Right up to the point
I'm surprised he didn't drop down further, because you say bunched up, but there were some gaps in places which I thought were interesting.
Yeah, the gap that opened up was conveniently a gap just ahead of a teammate. So maybe there was something on a team radio? I don't want to say anything, especially because it was Sebastian Montoya that opened up the gap, he says, with quotes around that. I'm not throwing slander at anyone just yet, but interesting, is it
convenient,
not?
I think is the word you're looking for.
The gap appeared at the right place at the right time.
But it was so. Portello in the end who won for Trident with teammate Oliver Goethe in second, and then Dino Boganovic in third. Yeah. So very nice there. Prema driver, nice to see them up there a little bit as well. And Trident doing very well for their opening weekend there. They got two of the big point finishes there for the weekend. I mean, sprints all very nice, but obviously less points. You want to be up there for the future race if you have to choose between the two. And you had decent close racing throughout the entire race, which made for a very nice second course for Formula 3 for this year. And again, we don't really need to sell Formula 3 to anyone. If you need to be sold on it, then you just have no heart. You just need to go and watch it.
It's Formula 1, but with like cartoony character. Yeah. There's an extra 50% and then just a bit cartoony with it. It's sort of wacky races almost at points, but it's good in that regard because you see these drivers learning things and you see how quickly they're adapting as well, how they're learning and adjusting through a race. That's where things become quite exciting.
Formula 2, though, we're going to go back there for a moment because we're going to talk through the drivers that stood out to us the most. Jesse, I'm going to throw it to you first.
I've got a good few notes in here. Obviously, I wanted to praise Iwasa. Some great driving from him, defending like a madman in the sprint against both Victor Martins and Teo Pourchaire, two drivers that are hard to defend from because they both will find a way through if they really want to get past. And Iwasa made a good go at defending from him. So it's not a bad drive from him. For the feature race, I won't give away who Timo's already chosen, but he stole what was going to be my choice. But yeah, I'm gonna back Ralph Boschong. I hope this isn't a flash in the pan from him, and he could be a good challenge against Pourchaire. Will he do a Drugovich? Will he just have good consistency all season long and snatch it from under Pourchaire's nose? We have yet to see.
The kind of driver he's not associated with any team in Formula One, and Aston Martin is the kind of team that'd be like, yeah, sod it, why not? Come and join us over here. We're having a great time.
I mean, they picked well when they had Drugovich, and he performed admirably during those F1 test sessions. So potentially they've got a good eye in somewhere. We'll have to wait and see. Who was your driver that stood out, though, from Formula 2?
Had to be Zane Maloney for me. If Carlin, I'm going to treat him nicely, I will. And I'll say, you did good, Zane. P18 to P3. That's nice. You know what? You'll get the qualifying sorted. That's okay. But man from Bushy Park did well.
The man from Bushy Park did indeed do well. We'll stick with you for your driver that stood out in Formula 3.
Pepe Marti for me, because even though he won a race and then did decently in the feature race, he's still a little bit down the order in the championship overall, which is a pain in the ass when you win a race over a weekend, but there we go. P1 and P6, good consistency, key for the championship. As we always say, consistency is key. So maybe an outside chance for him, even though it's only early doors, but you know, it's these kind of results where if you're not winning, you need to be in there in the points. And sixth place in the feature race is still a decent amount of points. So kudos to him for that.
Yeah, nice little drive. I'm going to be my usual indecisive self. Gabriele Mini, top-notch driving, really, but gutted with that feature race result. Equally, I do want to, again, with that Bortoleto drive, absolutely on it, keeping it in that window, sat in the dirty air of Mini the entire time and managed to capitalize on that without ruining his tyres, which, again, if you can keep those Formula 3 tyres, which have a mind of their own at times, if you can keep them in the window sitting in dirty air, there's a good little driver in there. It's that sort of young Sergio Perez of, oh, just keep my tyres going, keep my tyres going, keep my tyres going, and then do something completely different and come out of nowhere to get points. It's a driving skill that I know will be looked upon favourably, especially when you move up to racing series where you have more than two choices of tyre.
And so especially in Formula 3 where you don't have pit stops, and if you do, something's gone wrong generally. So if you can prove tyre management early doors, like you say, people further up the food chain are going to look very highly upon you. But that brings us nicely onto a new section that we've got exclusively for 2023, although maybe for 2024, hopefully for 2024. We'll deal with that when we get the Flersh Watch, which is just watching Sophia Flersch, which is not as creepy as it sounds because we're watching her on track where she's racing in Formula 3, so it's okay.
Glad you clarified that one.
I caught myself as I was saying, and I thought there's going to be people who are going to complain. So,
yeah,
back in Formula 3 for the first time since 2020. She's now with PHM by Shrews, not Campos, and qualified in P23, 0.144 behind Wisniki, one of her teammates, and 0.803 ahead of Farrier, her other teammate. So not bad out of 30 for her first time back. She's not been in single seaters since 2020, as far as I'm aware. She's just been in DTM and European Le Mans Series, so completely different brand of racing entirely. Mm. So for her to come in like that and have a decent qualifying against people who are coming up through the ranks and who have been in single seats a bit already, not bad.
Not bad at all. And again, you've got to phrase this against the fact that she would have had, obviously, the testing sessions. But George Russell made this excellent point with Formula One. It's a case of you don't expect a tennis world champion to rock up to a tennis tournament having only practiced for 3 days in the off-season.
Motorsport is a very odd sport like that, that you just cannot practice as much as you would like.
So she's obviously won't have had this practice or this ability to transition into these single-seaters as quite as efficiently as potentially others who have come from things like GB3 or Freca or F4 will have done, because she's been out racing giant, hefty old Le Mans cars or DTMs, which are not light bastards to chuck around and certainly not agile like an F3 car is. So there's a big gear change for her to acclimatize to. And if she's already coming in not last in qualifying, that's a good sign to begin with. So it's promising signs, certainly.
In the sprint race, the first race of the weekend, she finished in P22, which was higher than both of her teammates. Made one place with two retirements ahead. But again, you've got to be there. And finishing ahead of her teammates straight out of the box, jobs are good. And feature race, P24 start again, because there's no reverse grid for either race when you're finishing, when you're qualifying, that low down. Mm. Finished in P21, up three places, two retirements coming from behind her, plus Fornelli in the Trident dropped a load of places due to an incident. Had on-track overtakes as well, so that was very nice to see. And the piece de resistance for me was doing Ricciardo dive style and overtake attempt into turn one to try and get two cars. Very ambitious. Didn't pull it off, but crucially didn't lose any positions either. So that was awesome to see. And hopefully we can get more from that. And if she's already going for this kind of stuff this early doors, then, oh, mama, we're in for a good time.
I'd definitely say the feature race was the stronger of the two. Yeah, moving up three places. There were two retirements ahead of her in the field. So one of those overtakes was, or place gains was purely on merit. And again, being able to make those overtakes.
I think we got to see it on TV as well. So it was did. Refreshing to see for a change.
It did get TV coverage. And again, if you're making those overtakes in a relatively jumbled field and being able to hold on to those places in a circuit where the F3 grid is always moving backwards and forwards because it's one of those series where you've constantly got overtakes. It's great to see her be able to make that pass and make it stick and keep it, as in drive away from the guy they've just overtaken. So, yeah, it's promising signs. There's these sort of glowing embers that are starting to come together and form a bit of a sort of ball of warmth that could become a nice little fire as we go along. So we've got to keep hoping that PHM Charouse are going to keep stoking it and adding a bit of fuel to it and giving the driver training and the support that's needed.
Something I'm going to be interested to see as well is I need to check the F3 calendar for this year and how it matches up to past DTM and ELMS calendars to see if there's any track she's been to before. And if so, that'll be interesting to see how she does there in a different car. Because if she's familiar with the track at least, then there's potential.
I want to say Monza and Barcelona are almost certainly going to be on there. Possibly Silverstone. So there's at least three
circuits. Not Silverstone for the ELMS, but yeah.
But she will have likely driven Silverstone before.
Oh, she will have likely, definitely.
But certainly ELMS, she will have likely done Barcelona and Monza.
Imola, possibly. I'm not sure if F3 are there this year or not, though, so I'll have to check that.
Good question. I've got the calendar up somewhere. Hang on a second. 2 seconds, Ted. We've got F3 and Imola, so she might well...
That'll be interesting.
...know Imola, so that'll be good news for her as well. And equally, I think if we're going to do a flash watch, I think we ought to have like a Chadwick keep an eye, because obviously she's over in Indy NXT, Indy Next at the moment. And decent little weekend, although boisterous at St. Petersburg. But I think we had that with both big Indy and little Indy. It was scrappy all over the place.
All around.
It was scrappy all around with lots of drivers getting caught out in turn four in both leagues. So sort of credit where it's due. Bringing that car home, and it was battered by the end of that race. Like, she must have been struggling aero-wise towards the end.
She was doing a Fernando Alonso last year and just driving the car to destruction at points there.
She was...
Okay, I'm going to make mistakes, but we're going to reverse, we're going to reset, and we're going to go again, and we're going to try again.
She limped it home. Did she make up places from her starting position as well?
Yeah, I think she finished... she started at the back of the grid, so made it up to P13 in the end. So...
Was it P13 or P15? She was a fair ways back.
And P13 she made up was where she finished.
Mm. So, yeah, decent drive on track from her. And again, obviously, it's first race of the season, same as it is with Flush. If you've come from something that's different to drive, especially in Flush's case, where it's radically different coming into single-seaters, those Indy cars are very different to the what would have been the W Series, the Tortoise F4 cars last year's. It's going to be a very different car dynamically to get a hold of.
That step up we wanted for her. that it's going to take a couple of races for her to get to grips with that, I think. Yeah. But crucially, she's done a lot of mistakes in this, but none of them were fatal, and that is the very important thing there. Whereas other drivers who are from other areas of America who have possibly, with the various US junior categories, the US Pro 2000 Championship or whatever they're called, go on.
Or other drivers, potentially from Australia, Scott McLaughlin.
Yeah, in IndyCar, not Indy NXT.
My point is that it's easy to make mistakes even if you're used to driving these cars. And mistakes into turn four. Romain Grosjean did not make a mistake. He was pushed wide by Scott McLaughlin. I will die on this goddamn hill, Timo.
I think it's just better if we move on and you just tell us the F2 Drivers' Championship after the first round.
I'm going to do some breathing exercises. I'm going to regain my calm and we'll move on to the F2 Drivers and Constructors' Standings. So coming out of Bahrain, Théo Pourchaire leads the F2 Drivers' Standings, 32 points ahead of Ralph Boschong in P2 with 28. Maloney takes P3 with 15 points. So it's not spread out at the front and it's looking like a good year's battle for certainly P2 and P3. I'm wondering if Porsche is going to be able to run away with it or if he's going to struggle with his usual luck.
In the constructors, I kind of hope he doesn't run away with it, but
I don't want
the
to
same
struggle.
Time, I could. Yeah, I don't want to struggle either. It'd be interesting to see. I think if we can have some consistency from other players, then that'll be a nice challenge for him. And the fun fact I have about all three of those drivers, Jesse, is that they all have more points than Romain Grosjean.
Leave Roma out of this. F2 Constructors. Campos Racing leads the Constructor standings, 42 points. ART on 38 in P2. And Rodan Carling in P3 with 18 points. So, yeah, interesting spread of drivers across there. It's going to be interesting to see how things move forwards from there. Timo, why don't you run us through the top end of the F3 fields?
Completely different over in F3. Bortoleto P1 with 26 points. Goethe P2 with 23 points. And Beganovic P3 with 22 points. Interestingly, none of the sprint race podium people got to be in this top three for the championship overall just yet. It's a shame for them. Must try harder. F3 Constructors, meanwhile, Trident romped ahead of everyone else in P1 with 52 points. The Neymar Prema are back in P2 with 28 points, and ART round out the top three with 22 points to their name.
Nicely done. That's all we've got time for, unless you've got anything else you want to finally chuck at us.
No, but I'm just very glad F2 and F3. Bring back. That was some proper blockbuster racing all weekend there. So simply lovely.
Simply lovely, as Max Verstappen would say. And yes, remember to join us again soon when we'll be previewing the Saudi Arabian Formula One Grand Prix. Have we got F2 there this year as well?
We do.
Oh, excellent. So we'll have some F2 content coming for you from Saudi Arabia, as well as F1 content, and hopefully in the middle. Now that he's back on your telly boxes with F2 and F3 commentary, we'll have an interview with Alex Brundle coming to the YouTubes and the Spotifys near you soon. So remember to make sure you've liked, subscribed, and got notifications turned on to not miss anything. In the meantime, Timo, where can the people find you?
Just about gosh darn everywhere, Jesse. You can find me over on Is It Fast, On The Curbs, the Nitro RX Podcast, Paddock Sorority, and Instagram. Jesse, what about yourself?
I can be found across Instagram and Twitter as @JesseOnCars. I've also got control of the Undercut Podcast Instagram, Twitter account, rather. So go find us on there to have a look and see what we're tweeting about, or usually what I'm moaning about. And if you like my writing, go find me in Classic Car Weekly, where I'm usually writing about and doing interesting things. I'm off to go and pretend to be James Bond tomorrow, driving a very nice Lotus indeed.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.